Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host, Alfred Adusk, and James Corbett of The Corbett Report will be here after the first segment of today's program. Oh, today's Thursday, January 12, 2017, so let's get started with the market report. Great day, and you can always tell it was a big sigh there as I was, you know, going into Thursday. But that was it's been a hectic day today. People get motivated to purchase gold and silver when, you know, there's a little action in the markets, and we are getting some action this year in the gold and silver market. And I'm always much happier when gold and silver are higher, so I shouldn't even have to give the report. You should be able to tell by my tone. If I'm happy, gold is higher. If I'm grumpy, silver's and gold are lower. But anyway, gold today was off the high. It was up big this morning, up 1207, reaching the high. Pulled back 470 to the upside, $4.70 to the upside at $1,196.80. Silver was up 5 cents at 1685, off the high of 1706. So it an extremely good day in the markets this morning. They opened up with a bang. Platinum was up $4 at 979, and palladium was up 3 at 762. Crude oil today was up 0.81 at 53.06, and a little bit of pressure. It also backed off of its low on the day, down 38 for the USDX 101.35. The paper markets today, they clawed back some of their losses. They were down triple digits big. I think I glanced once. We were too busy to really follow the markets today. I think I saw 160 points to the downside at their peak low, but currently down 63, so it came back 100 points, 19,891. The NASDAQ was down 16 at 55.47. The S&P was down 5 at 22.70. 10-year yield 2.36. And the euro, 106, up 0.38, the same as the USDX. So the dollar was down and the euro was higher. European markets were a little pressure overnight, 1% on most of them. And the fear and greed index, 0.55, so a big drop. Yesterday it was 60. Today it dropped 5 points to 55. So again, the emotion driving the market is getting closer into that fear level, as it should be. So we had gold rose today above 1,200 an ounce for the first time since late November. You had the ETFs. They jumped the most since the day after the election. And as I mentioned, the USDX at the peak of the day dropped 1% against the Japanese yen. So we had the futures, gold futures, rally to a 7-week high. And it's all related to, as the mainstream media and analysts predict or say, or was Donald Trump's press conference yesterday. They linked the rise in gold's rise today to Trump's press conference, because he didn't provide much detail on his economic stimulus plan. So I don't know if why the markets were waiting for him to make some sort of huge announcement. As far as we're going to get so tired of hearing that word huge. And that's how we huge, the huge economic stimulus plan. But gold's had a nice gain so far this year, 4% for the year. Not so bad. And as I mentioned, his press conference yesterday had very few specifics, any type of timing. I know he wants to immediately replace Obamacare. Big question is, what are they going to replace it with? So, you know, I'd kind of like for him to take a little bit of time to see what's how they're going to replace it. And will it really have any impact on our premiums? So it's... we'll be interested to see now if they come out and support the health savings programs. You know, you could get pros and cons on them. Basically, they're just a catastrophic type savings account. You pay for all your little incidentals, and, you know, but it'll, you know, your savings will cover some, maybe it'll cover some of your major you know, your insurance would cover your major expenses if you had any medical expenses. But again, when we read day in and day out, year after year, that most people in this country don't have any more than $400 and $500 in their savings account, they can't plan for a $1,000 emergency. I can't imagine that they can save much for their health care. There's some interesting tidbits out today, and I'll try to get through them all today, which I never do, but I'm going to try today again. Jeff Bezos, the Amazon founder, and we all know that he owns the Washington Post. Well, he bought a huge, there I go again, a huge mansion in Washington, D.C., and it's the former textile museum. It's a 27,000 square foot property, and he's going to convert it to a single family home, a 27,000 single family home. And what makes this article interesting, because I'm not, you know, Bezos is not my idea of a good guy, but President Obama, they are renting a property nearby along with Mr. Trump's daughter, Ivanka. So they're all going to be living in the same neighborhood. So that probably is the most secure neighborhood in the country, as you have these people buying into this country. So I thought it was a little interesting that, you know, they might say things, but, you know, they become neighbors and they'll be leaning over the, you know, picket fence in the backyard, chit-chatting to one another. Another interesting article, it's not so interesting, but, you know, Rudy Giuliani, he finally got his job from Mr. Trump. He was named as an informal advisor on cybersecurity. This was according to the presidential transition team. So he named Donald Trump, named former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani as an informal advisor on cybersecurity. And I really didn't know. I thought, Giuliani, what's he got? How, you know, yeah, he was an ex-cop and he's a mayor, but what's he know about cybersecurity? Well, he does head a consulting firm, a cybersecurity consulting firm, Giuliani Partners. And so I found that interesting, and perhaps that was a good choice for Giuliani to be, you know, part of that team and an informal advisor. They continue to grill the, before we get to that, we talked about this, I think, earlier this week, how the world is changing, how we're seeing these, the people are wanting different politicians. The world is changing. It looks like it's changing. And we talked about Marine Le Pen, the French National Front leader, who will run for the France's office as president. Well, she announced, or it was an unannounced visit to New York, and this is just 4 months before their election. So Marine Le Pen, the French National Front leader, was spotted at the Trump Tower during an unannounced visit to New York, less than 4 months before their election. Now, everybody says this was Donald Trump had no plans to meet with Le Pen. She had no plans, but it was a private visit to New York. She ended up at Trump Tower. So we would have to think that certainly he welcomed her into a meeting and probably giving her some advice on how to win the election and what will happen afterwards. She is set to launch her official campaign on February 4th. And she has repeatedly said she was supportive of Trump's policy for the U.S. and called him a sign of hope for the European anti-establishment politicians in a press conference this month. So, you know, if you read media, if you read a lot of information on her, you can read some reports that say she's lagging and other reports she's leading. Not a lot of different than what we experienced here in the U.S. during this past election. Now I'm going to get to Rex Tillerson, some of his comments during his confirmation hearing. You know, it was interesting. Just a little, you can always pick up little comments that you, and short. It's interesting and dangerous, I would think. And this was in relation to China. China did respond quickly. China, and it was about the South China Sea. And China said it has the right to act in its own territory in the disputed South China Sea. And, of course, pushing back after Tillerson, the nominee for Secretary of State, said that Beijing must be denied access to reclaim reefs. It's not should be denied, or maybe, or must be denied. So China's foreign ministry issued a quick response to those remarks. The threat from former Exxon, they called it a threat from him. And so that, no, it raises the prospect of a more different type of a U.S. approach to Beijing's military buildup in the area. And as we all know, China has reclaimed thousands of acres of land. They keep boats away from other claimant states like the Philippines and Vietnam. And I think this was also part of the importance of the TPP, because you have in the TPP, if I remember correctly, both the Philippines and the Vietnam in that trade agreement. I think we already have some trade agreements, but I think maybe the Philippines was a big part of that trade agreement. So, and I think this was all in connection to that South China Seas. Tillerson compared China's actions to those of Russia in Crimea. He said saying a failure to respond had allowed it to keep pushing the envelope in the South China Sea. He says, we're going to have to send China a clear signal that first the island building stops. Now, you're not going to build anymore. It's going to stop. And second, your access to those islands is not going to be allowed. So basically, to me, sounds like, hey, we're going to kick you out. This is not going to be allowed. You are not going to be allowed to do that. And this is certainly a more aggressive defense posture against China, in addition to Trump's calls for a tougher line on trade. We know Trump earlier questioned the U.S. policy of recognizing Beijing over the government in Taiwan. We know he criticized China for a perceived failure to pressure North Korea over its nuclear program. We also know Trump calls China, and I think he's going to claim them as a country who manipulates their currencies. So I think it's really interesting. I mean, those are, to me, I'm not a military person, those are pretty strong words. And we have a country who owns a lot of our debt. There's a lot that China can do. And so China still came out and agreed that there should be areas of cooperation between the two countries. And we know that the chairman of the Alibaba Group, Jack Ma, met with Trump. Big news on Monday that they were going to create 1 million new jobs in the U.S. by helping small businesses sell goods to China. Now, do you believe in coincidences? Do you think this is coincidental that Jack Ma just, met with Trump on Monday? And you have these strong words coming out today. And I don't think anything is by any means by coincidence. Malcolm Davis, a senior analyst at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute in Canberra, said, short of going to war with China, there is nothing the Americans can do. So do we, we can say anything that we want, and China's going to continue to do what they want, unless maybe there's some sort of bargaining chip with trade. Don't know. But I don't know if we're drawing the line in the sand, and I think that's a very dangerous thing to do. But I do know Tillerson did disagree with Mr. Trump, but I do believe that anyone in Trump's cabinet will obey Mr. Trump, whether they disagree with him or not. So I think that's interesting. And is this what we're going to see? Are we going to see a showdown between Trump and the China president? And something else that's coming into the news. This was reported back in December. I'm not sure if we talked about it or not. But you have China, for the first time, is going to be in the Davos meeting here. I think it's at the end of January. He's going to lead an 80-strong delegation to Davos. Oh, it's next week. That's 80 strong of business executives and billionaires to the annual gathering of the super rich and powerful people in Davos. Now, some people think this is just a vacation for the rich, but I don't. I think these are the wealthiest people on the planet. And it isn't just this meeting. Of course, they meet and communicate throughout the year. But this is a way, I believe, of letting us know that they're in control. They do make arrangements. They do make associations. And I do believe they do lots of planning. And this will be the first time a Chinese president will attend this forum, the World Economic Forum in Davos. It's going to be led by the country's biggest ever delegation. And when you hear some of the things that he says, that China's president says, he wants to defend. His objective going there is to defend globalization. He's there to defend, he's warning other world leaders that business executives and celebrities, that the rise of populism could lead to war, poverty, confrontation. And he takes on the mantle of defending globalism. And he says he wants to push for greater international cooperation, development, and economic globalization to help build a human community with shared destiny. Are you kidding me? I mean, even this guy is insane, more insane than the guy in North Korea. If these are their plans, they're not giving up the fight easily. And that's what we have to prepare for. We have to prepare for something coming our way, because these guys just aren't going to let go of this global trade and their wealth and their money and their power very easily. So again, prepare financially. You can do that by calling us at Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. I've got those great prices on the 1-ounce silver rounds. They're the Buffalo rounds. They come in tubes of 20, a great price, few pennies over spot. And we also have some great prices on gold and silver. The 2017 Silver Eagles will be out next week. We were running specials on those. And again, the volatility of this year is going to be... If you have gold and silver, you'll be able to sit back and enjoy the ride. 1-800-375-4188. Alfred and James Corbett will be here right after this short break. Find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk, and I'm here with our guest, James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com, one of the best publications on the internet, URLs, websites, videos, podcasts. I think the only means of communication that James has overlooked so far is maybe notes in a bottle that were sent out into the ocean. Have you done any of that yet, James, or not?
Haven't done that. Haven't done CB or ham radio. So, you know, there's a few things out there.
There's a few horizons left to conquer. James is calling in from Japan, and let's see what's hot and fresh. Here's something from Zero Hedge. It says, protests in Mexico push country to brink of revolution. Nobody's talking about it. Is that something you know about, or is it something to be concerned about, or is that a hyperbole?
I wouldn't know because I haven't looked into that story at all, so I can't really comment on it. But, you know, I mean, it's another potentially very interesting story, obviously, given the changeover in administrations that's taking place right now, and obviously the upheaval that's coming in terms of U.S.-Mexican relations. But I don't know about that story in particular.
Another one here from IBT, International Business Times, and says business biggest of U.S. armaments since end of Cold War arrive in Europe. They're making a big deal. U.S. troops began offloading some 2,800 pieces of equipment, including 87 tanks and 144 Bradley fighting vehicles. And the implication is this is intended to intimidate, saber-rattling in order to intimidate Russia a little bit. Is this significant? 87 tanks, does that impress Russia? 144 Bradley fighting vehicles, or is this a gesture?
Well, I mean, if actual hot war broke out between Russia and NATO, one would assume that would not be quite enough to handle that type of fighting.
I understand.
But I think it is obviously meant as a signal, and it's probably being read loud and clear in the Kremlin and elsewhere. And also, of course, I think this is probably mostly a type of reassurance to Eastern European nations, which at least are claiming to be quaking in their boots over the potential of Russian aggression. And we have to look into the financial as well as the geopolitical implications of this, because, of course, it is NATO's business, really, essentially, to maintain their funding levels or to even increase them, as they've been trying to do in recent years, getting various members to commit to, I think it's 2.5% of GDP, to fund the NATO operations. And given that the incoming president-elect has at least mused on the campaign trail that NATO is obsolete and America has to reconsider its participation, I don't expect that to really eventuate. But at any rate, even musing about that is probably something that NATO doesn't want to hear. So to justify their existence, they're always looking for enemies and causes. And the Russian aggression in Europe is the latest, easiest way to basically justify the types of deployments that they want to wage in the future.
There's an article in antiwar.com, and the headline is NATO Report Blames Russia for Populism Worldwide. Also blames Russians for Trump and Brexit. This just cracks me up. I don't know that you would remember. I talked about it before you got on the program tonight. I talked about it in the first segment of the program. Flip Wilson was a comedian back in the 1960s, maybe 70s in the United States, and one of his characters, he'd put on a dress and he'd act as if he was Geraldine. And Geraldine was getting into trouble on a regular basis, and whatever she did, she'd claim the devil made her do it. And here we have now, everybody's blaming Russia. A new report from NATO is following a narrative trend which began in the United States and has since spread across Western Europe, accusing Russia of being to blame for the rise of populism worldwide as an effort to undermine NATO and the European Union. This report blames Russia for the election of Donald Trump. It also blames Russia for the Brexit vote. It blames Russia for growing anti-European Union movements in several of the European Union countries. And it blames Russia for improving polling numbers in Germany and France for Eurosceptic parties. So, this is comical to me on one level. But on the other hand, is there a darker implication here? Do you see a darker implication or darker potential here?
Well, obviously, yes. And I think I certainly do see the comedy in it as well, because we're being asked to believe either that Russia, the Russian government and Russian manipulators are the most fearsome manipulators of human opinion.
They're ruling the world.
Exactly, ruling the world from the Kremlin, somehow or other, in some vague, undefined way. Or we are asked to believe that America and I guess Europe and other places are just so vulnerable, so completely and utterly vulnerable to even the slightest breath of wind coming against their democratic systems that it's just going to topple the entire paradigm. It's laughable and ridiculous. And I would generally say that what is happening is the definitive cleaving, the total separation of those who think independently and follow independent media and think for themselves versus people who are just consuming the 24/7 news cycle, by having CNN on in the background or something like that. But actually, I don't think that's the way this split is being played, because we see in one sense perplexing, but I suppose completely expected and probably predicted phenomenon of the people on the left side of the paradigm who have always been against the big corporate media outlets that they think, are controlling the world and probably are to some extent, or against government institutions, especially against the intelligence agencies, which, of course, people on the left have been pointing out have been involved in all sorts of shenanigans all over the world that are liars at heart. But suddenly, these same institutions are now on the stage as the true purveyors of truth in the world, the shining light of goodness and everything holy. It's quite amazing to watch this happening, and I think that is obviously a split that's being played right now. And so about half of the public is probably, if not fully on board, at least willing to accept these ludicrous notions simply because it is politically convenient for them to do so. And that has some pretty scary implications, I think, for the way that opposition to Trump is going to be played over the next several years. I think there's a lot of very good things to be very nervous about with regards to a Trump administration and some of his cabinet picks and things like that, and we'll see how that eventuates. But obviously, relying on the CIA and other intelligence agencies to leak information from exceptionally shady sources and not leak evidence of any sort to back these assertions up is clearly not the effective way of countering something like Trump. So, I mean, it's just, we've arrived at a spot that's even beyond crazy, I would say. I mean, I think we were crazy a few months ago. What's happened in the last few weeks is
desperation.
Really overreached that.
Have we gone
clearly,
desperation? Is that what this is? Because it's so poorly done. I mean, it's just shameless. I mean, it's comical, it's ridiculous, and it's so poorly done that you would think people that are capable of manipulating public opinion, they should be ashamed of themselves. They said, I mean, this is, what was it, Woody Allen and Played Against Sam. And I don't know if you know the movie, if you know it or you remember it. There's a guy who plays Bogart, and he's advising Woody Allen on how to get girls. And he says, tell her you're really something, sweet. I've seen some girls in my time, but you're really something. And Woody Allen says, oh, then she'll never believe that. She'll never believe. Do it. Just do it. And he says, baby, I've seen some girls in my time, but you're really something. And she says, oh, you really think so? The public is a little bit, is that what they think of the public? The people that are manipulating public opinion right now, they're idiots. They're stupid. We can make them think anything. Or
well,
are they?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's quite evident that the types of information that's being pushed right now truly are beneath the intelligence of, I would imagine, I'd like to imagine, the vast majority of the population. But again, I don't think this is playing on a level of rationality or intelligence. It's about people's worldview, essentially. Ultimately, this is what comes down to, because, of course, their political paradigms are based on an underlying worldview that X is a bad thing. So if in the Democrat worldview, that's anyone with an R after their name is a bad thing, and thus must be opposed in any way possible, including aligning yourself with the CIA or whatever it is. You raise an interesting point, which is, how are these master manipulators of public opinion so utterly out of touch, so completely clueless as to how this is all coming across, and the fact that this is exactly why Trump did really energize a lot of people in the United States, is because he has clearly been opposed by all of the status quo forces that people are utterly sick of. I think the Trump movement has to be seen less as a love of Trump as it is a complete attempt, at any rate, to completely reject the status quo. And this raises the possibility of some sort of, you know, second level mind game that's being played, but that this is really about legitimizing Trump in the minds of the people who voted for him as a someone who's against the status quo. And in the best way to do that is to come and make it so obvious that the status quo is against him. I mean, we can get into that kind of game and those kind of, you know, four-dimensional chess moves. Maybe that's at play, but I don't know if I have any specific evidence for that. But again, I guess we don't have to deal with evidence anymore, as we can see from these latest reports.
Evidence is purely optional. You know, just write this stuff up as you go along and read it to the public. It'll be all right. What gets me, what bothers me, as funny and hilarious as the article about the NATO study reveals that Russians are responsible for everything that's bad that ever happened. NATO is being the nation, the NATO nations, Western Europe is being conditioned to view Russia in a bad light. And the people in the United States are being conditioned to view Russia in a bad light. And is this an accident, or are they desperate to have a war with Russia, and they need to condition people, and they don't care how stupid it sounds, look, the Russians, they're responsible for, they were the guy on the grassy knoll when they shot Kennedy. That was Russians. Are we getting ready for a war here?
I still can't bring myself to believe that most of the people who are pushing for this kind of insanity truly want a war. I think they truly do want an enemy, and they do want to make it into that sort of relationship, a convenient enemy that can justify all sorts of things politically and financially and otherwise. But I can't bring myself to believe that they truly want a war, because clearly in this current day and age, a direct military confrontation between NATO and Russia would not look like any previous conventional military warfare that we've ever seen before. Not only because we're now in the nuclear age, but imagine all of the other technology and goodies that they would have. So, and it is interesting to see that regardless of the extent to which Russia was involved in some propaganda manipulation campaign in the U.S. election or not, the ideas, the memes, the themes of these types of stories are now revolving around information warfare. That's a very interesting development, because, of course, that is the way this is developing, and we are more likely to see information warfare and cyber warfare and financial warfare than I think we are to see conventional military confrontation. But, of course, the conventional military confrontation has to be kept as an idea, if for no other reason than, of course, to justify not only the existence of organizations like NATO, but, of course, all of the bajillions and bajillions of dollars that get sloshed around to the military contractors on an annual basis.
You know, I've got an article here that touches on this. It's Prepare for the Era of Cyber Warfare from Prophecy News Watch. One of the things they point out, military use of GPS and other electronic communication devices has evolved from strategic advantage to vulnerability. And I understand that. As we become more efficient, that efficiency is taken out of our margin for error. We become more efficient. We become more vulnerable. If you have an old sundial sitting out in the backyard, it can rain, it can hail, it can snow. The sundial still works. Put it on a Swiss chronometer. It's far more accurate, far more efficient, but it's also vulnerable. Hit it with a baseball bat, and it's going to fold up. That's the end of it. You can hit the sundial with a baseball bat, and it continues to function. We have become, as we get more and more and more efficient, we actually become more vulnerable. I think this might be part of the reason why they don't hear any noise from advanced civilizations that are in other galaxies. Where are their radio signals? I think they get so efficient that one little pebble out of place and all of a sudden the whole thing folds up. And that's just speculation on my part. But when we talk about cyber warfare, it's a reflection of how efficient we've become, how electronic we've become. And now, do we really need missiles? Do we need a nuclear missile, or is it enough to just cripple somebody's electrical grid, power grid?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, the vulnerability to disruption has increased greatly as people become more and more reliant on their technologies. And what would have been perhaps a major event, but at least livable several decades ago in terms of something like, as we're constantly being warned about, an electromagnetic pulse that might take out the electrical grid or something. That might have been a major event a few decades ago, but something that people would have found a way to cope with at least for some period of time. At this point, people are so reliant on technology for every aspect of their lives that it would be difficult to even imagine the breakdown of the economy, but the mental breakdowns that people would have. It would be perhaps even scary to see that, because again, as I think we've talked about before, this is a sort of general societal breakdown that's occurred over several decades of urbanization and disconnection has really rendered people more vulnerable in the social and psychological senses as well. So yes, it is a highly interdependent system, and in some ways I think you could argue that the real push towards globalism has occurred in terms of those types of the economic supply lines that are being fed by places all around the globe, the technological supply lines in terms of technology being created in a number of different places, assembled somewhere else, and then shipped halfway around the world. These types of things has, again, made it, I think, increasingly less likely that major powers will go into direct military confrontation, because they all benefit from those interconnections that exist. It's almost unthinkable about the ways that countries like even the once mighty United States would be able to function if they were truly cut off from their cheap plastic goods suppliers in China and elsewhere. So these types of changes are taking place, have already taken place to a large extent, and as I think you're right, they have definitely made people generally more vulnerable in pretty much every conceivable sense.
Yeah, no, it's pretty amazing, and I think when we're going to take a break for a couple of commercials, but when we can come back, you can speculate as to whether or not this increased vulnerability to our electronic infrastructure, does this contribute to a stronger and stronger police state in this country? Do we need the police state to protect the infrastructure? We'll be back on financial survival in just a moment with my guest James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with my guest, James Corbett, from the Corbett Report, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com, Corbett. And when we broke some commercials, we were talking about the impact of increased efficiency in our electronic infrastructure, also making us increasingly vulnerable. And one of the things that's bothered me about this is as we become increasingly vulnerable, one clever individual, you can call him a terrorist, you could call him a teenager, is capable. I mean, some of these kids are bright. They're capable of doing things to the fragile electronic infrastructure that can put communities and even states out of business for a while. And now, does that mean we have to go to less freedom? Do we have to go to a more fascist society in order to make sure that nobody does anything stupid and causes our fragile electronic infrastructure to collapse at one point or another? Do you see what I'm saying there, James?
Oh, I certainly do. And this is, again, I think a perfectly predictable result of the fact that centralized systems of control and power always benefit from either crises or perceived crises or potential crises, so that the fostering and creation of those crises can in fact be in almost every instance to the benefit ultimately of the system itself, maybe not particular players within that system, but the power systems generally benefit from this. So for example, 9/11, obviously a terrible and traumatic event, but it certainly didn't hinder. In fact, it only gave further impetus to the neocons who were presiding over the government at the time that it occurred, and obviously wrote the blank check for Iraq and much else that happened during those years. So that's an example of that, and I think the potential for increasing disruption and crises caused by these new technologies, again, gives the impetus to systems, centralized power structures to regulate and look over and make sure they're involved in every aspect of our conceivable aspect of our lives to protect us from the mad boogeymen who might be out there under the bed creating whatever. In fact, I mean, the types of things that the technology are enabling now are, again, not only incredibly wonderful, but also incredibly potentially devastating when you start to look at genetic manipulation of various sorts, or even various gray goo scenarios, as it's called, where you can develop nanobots that can rearrange things at the molecular level that could potentially turn the entire planet into a mass of gray goo and things like this. This has been called the gray goo problem. And in fact, you can go and read an April 2000 article by Bill Joy, who is the founder of Sun Microsystems, that was published in Wired, Why the Future Doesn't Need Us, where he was warning about genetics and nuclear and robotic technology and how it truly could destroy humanity. And he was writing about this quite in all seriousness, I mean, 15 years ago, and imagine how much closer we are to such a scenario today. So that exists, and I think that is and is increasingly going to be an excuse for the types of systems of control that we see coming into place, where the government is now basically arguing that they are the Lord Emperors of the universe and have the right to spy on everything that happens at all times, and increasingly the ability to do so. I was just recently talking to Rick Falkving of the Swedish, the original Pirate Party, about Rule 41, which is a... It's just a change in, it's not even a legislative change, it's just a change in an operating procedure under the Department of Justice, so-called, that will allow the FBI, that does, now it's already gone into effect, allows the FBI to deem anyone on the planet that they deem to be in any way involved with even suspicion of activity that may be potentially illegal, they now claim the authority to be able to go in and search and otherwise manipulate the computer equipment of those people anywhere on the planet. So literally, the FBI now literally claims to have jurisdiction over the entire planet and all computer systems on it. A pretty remarkable thing, I think you would agree, and yet has received remarkably little attention in the media. And it's just a sign of exactly that, the perceived threat or the claimed threat of terrorists that could be anywhere using these types of technology systems means that we will monitor and control all computer systems on the planet, which increasingly doesn't just mean your computer sitting on your desktop. That's vulnerable enough, but now
your refrigerator.
Exactly. Everything. Your home is being wired into this grid. And again, not crazy conspiracy theory. David Petraeus, the former CIA director, was talking several years ago about pretty soon we'll be able to monitor everyone through their dishwashers and washing machines. They're openly talking about this. And yet still, most people have no idea what's coming.
It makes you wonder. We see movies where we have some sort of a catastrophe, World War III, whatever, and the survivors are left to grub it out in whatever remains. Small population, ultimately a primitive world. You're almost reduced to the status of cavemen, and you wonder, can the modern man, is he capable of adapting to a caveman lifestyle? Okay, we can kind of look at that and say, can we fall back that far and still survive? Or as we, you know, as citizens of this age, can we fall back and still survive? But there's another question. Can we advance much more and still survive? How much further into the future can we go before, as a species, we are simply so unfit that we can't make it in a world that has to be? I mean, I can understand, and I'm not in the least bit favor of fascism, and yet I can understand that there's people up there that are saying that in order to protect the power grid, we got to monitor everybody in this country. Because if one guy does something stupid, all of a sudden, 50 million people can be out of power. Are we going to evolve? Advance? Are we capable of moving into the future? Or are we approaching a limit to, you know, our capacity?
I truly believe that the answer to that question is up to us in a very real sense. And specifically, I'm talking about the fundamental underlying assumption that we have been going on as a society, as a civilization, as a species for centuries has always been that more centralized processes are always more efficient and therefore better than decentralized. And that, I think, is a mentality that has been fostered by various technological revolutions in the past, perhaps most easily understood the Industrial Revolution, that created these incredible machines that could do the work of 20 or 50 people in a similar amount of time, just using one machine, perhaps operated by one person. And those types of giant machines necessitated the collection of workers and capital into these small spaces known as factories that created urbanization and things of this sort, and really upended society, but created the mass production culture, which has facilitated this standard of living that we enjoy today. So that's the way I think people understand this progression. It's bigger and more centralized and more controlled in fewer and fewer hands, but it has enabled this incredible prospering of wealth unimaginable in times past. Now, I think if we continue to proceed along that way, we are designing systems that ultimately, yes, can be destabilized by anyone on the planet and could affect people on the other side of the planet, let alone everyone else in between. And that does create systemic instabilities that, as you say, well, if it only takes a few bad apples, then we have to monitor every single apple on the planet. What's the alternative? Well, the alternative is to think, do we technologically need these centralized, for example, a centralized electrical grid, which connects everybody in a type of grid where any point in that grid is vulnerable and can be hacked into and destroyed and what have you? Or do we actually have the technological ability to decentralize things like electrical grids and electrical production or anything else? I mean, the internet itself is a prime example of this. The internet is not a thing per se. It is not a centralized thing. It is a decentralized network of meshes of computers. There's no central node that can be taken out. The internet cannot be destroyed unless you destroy, I guess, every single computer on the planet. And that's the point of a system like that. Can we apply that mentality to the creation of future systems? And I think there are some people who are coming up with some very innovative ways to apply decentralization to these technologies in ways that will make them censorship-proof and hacking, not hacking-proof per se, but at least make it so that any one particular part that is hacked doesn't mean the entire system will be vulnerable. I think there are technological ways to do it, but people generally are in the mindset that bigger and more centralized is better. And of course, people in centralized positions of control who benefit from that, those types of systems, want to foster that mentality. So I think it's up to the public to understand that the real inflection point of human history may be this generation that is going through this transition into either a completely centralized and controlled, utterly surveilled society, or maybe a type of freedom that was hitherto unimaginable in human history, that's facilitated by peer-to-peer networking and decentralization and getting out of these systems of control. And it really is a choice that people are stumbling into blindly right now by, say, purchasing Apple devices, which are closed source and walled off, and you can't do anything to them. And if you so much as open them up, you void the warranty and everything. So you are in this little controlled system, or you can choose to go with an open source system where you can decide what you where and how and in what way you use the open source software that you install and things like that. Again, it can be on that level. It can also be on the societal planning level where we talk about electrical grids and things like that. And I think that's the fundamental choice that we are facing as a species, really, going ahead. And I think we already know, as I say, which way the centralized mindset is going to take us, and that is into a completely controlled society.
Yeah, I agree. Moving in a little different direction here in the last 3.5-4 minutes of the program. What have we got? A little more than that. 4.5 minutes, something like that. We got an article here from the Hacker News. And the headline is, over 27,000 MongoDB databases held for ransom within a week. All right. Now, the reason I bring this up is, it's, down here it says in part, initial attacks saw ransom of 0.2 of a Bitcoin, which is nearly $184, at least at the time, 0.2 of a Bitcoin to the attacker. If you wanted to get your data freed up, these ransom attacks, they lock up your computer, they give you a send an email, if you want your computer unlocked, you're going to have to send us 0.2 of a Bitcoin, and blah, 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 we'll open up your computer for you again. The reason I mention it is because Bitcoin is perhaps the favorite currency for hacker criminals, all right? And I'm using the word criminal just, I'm not really trying to be pejorative about this. I'm just saying, look, these guys are committing some crimes. They're grabbing people's property. They're crooks. But they're getting away with it because you don't have to pay them off. You don't have to give them gold coins. You could find them then. You don't have to pay them with a check in the mail. All right? They could be found. There's something about Bitcoin, apparently, where the attackers think they can get away with this. And at the same time, there's a headline here, as India changes cash war goalpost, Bitcoin gets blamed for capital flight. That's out of India. The Indian government is blaming, Bitcoin is causing them some trouble. There's another headline. China's Bitcoin capital flight hits mainstream as analysts fear crackdown. Again, is Bitcoin on the verge of getting some serious adverse attention from the government? from the governments of the world.
They certainly are, and in fact, that was one of the trends that I wrote about in the most recent International Forecaster, where I was writing about tech trends for 2017, and I specifically identified Bitcoin regulation and interest from regulators as one of the trends for 2017 that we can absolutely expect. The IRS and SEC and others have already indicated that they're looking into their current regulation and whether they need to add layers of control to that. And as you say, China, or I believe you pointed out India, but China is also has indicated that their regulators are going to be looking at increasing regulation on Bitcoin. And in fact, we've just gotten a report out of Reuters that apparently the foreign exchange regulators in China, the SAFE, Special Administration of Foreign Exchange, or whatever that stands for, have issued some new capital controls or at least new guidance on capital controls in that country, and have specifically orally, not in writing, but orally told dozens of the major banks in China not to let anyone know about these or why they're enforcing these new rules. One could assume that Bitcoin exchange regulation and things like that might be part of those new capital controls that they're trying to bring in there, but I guess we only have to assume because we won't be able to find out directly. But yes, I think this is quite clear that the fundamental question is, do you want if not anonymous, at least pseudonymous transactions in this world, or do you want everything controlled so that we can make sure that the guardian angels in government can look over everything and make sure nothing bad is ever happening? I know which side of that I stand on, but at any rate, I think we're going to see the government making their case for why we can't allow such things to exist in the near future.
I understand. We're down to our last 30 seconds or so. James, anything you'd like to add before we have to fade out?
Happy New Year. I'm looking forward to 2017.
Happy New Year. Yeah, I understand. I'm glad the election's over. I'm glad we're into a new year, and let's hope for the best. Thank you, James. Thank you for being on the program. I'm Alfred Addis, here with James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com, and this is Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, with good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Todd, the producer, and James Corbett. Bye-bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.